C1S. Number 24B.
Perhaps you remember that about a year ago you had a big meeting here in London about all the spiritual healers in England, all the various denominations. I think there were Protestants there, Catholics there, Buddhists there, spiritualists there, no Christian scientists there. And at that meeting one could see how on so many various bases these non-material healings were accomplished. But they had no approximation to spiritual healing. So we stand still a bit unique in our purpose and basis. In the basis, namely, that healing is based on truth. On truth itself. On God itself. Now we had that wonderful sentence at the beginning of the chapter where she said that Christian Science is based on truth as the principle of all science. Whereas all the other signs are searching for truth, to find out what truth is. Christian Science goes out from truth, from the whole of truth, and is acting from that standpoint. And in Christian Science, truth, which is the remedy, heals through mind, capital M, and not through mind, small m, through those various mental ways of influencing people and healing bodies. So, if we go to our text on medicine, in this case I have finished my exposition of where material medicine stands today, and I want to take now text of the textbook. And in the light of what we have seen now, I think we can much more value the bigness of Mrs. Eddy's discovery. We can now see that her medicine is so much different from everything else, that her remedy is so much different from the remedy of physical medicine, that we can only be stand at awe before her revelation. I have given you a list of epitomes which epitomizes the whole part on medicine. In the whole framework of the chapter, you remember that we have arrived at the point of truth. We had in the first section on science, we had mind, spirit and soul, and principle, where she showed that mind translates mortal mind out of itself back into the divine mind. Then in spirit we could see that spirit translates the material concept of the universe out of itself into a spiritual concept of the universe. Then in soul, that soul reverses the testimony of the physical senses and accepts the truth of soul sense. Then in principle, we saw that principle, an understanding of principle, really replaces the concept of natural science for spiritual science. Then came the big part on theology, which had the tone of life, showing that life translates a dogmatic dead sense of religion and theology out of itself into a very living sense of Christianity. And now we come to the part of medicine, which has the overall tone of truth. Truth, as I try to summarize it here, showing that Christian Science replaces the common belief in the curative effect of drugs with truth as the only remedy. So the whole tone, you see, of this part is always showing from all sides, from all various sides, how to replace any other sense of remedy which we might have for the one and only true sense of remedy, truth. That truth is the only remedy. It's a big translation taking place. This part is laid out in the order of the days of creation. Don't ask me why, but that's how I found it. It's laid out in mind, the three tones, spirit, the three tones, then soul and principle in five tones, and life in four tones, truth in seven tones, and love in seven tones, as she usually does. Now, whenever I come to go through the text of the textbook, I get sandwiched in between two opinions of the listeners. Some would like me to take it more or less sentence by sentence and not leave out anything. And the others say, oh, if he only wouldn't read from the text, but just talk by himself about the text. So I'll try to take the middle way. I will try to go chronologically along the text, but perhaps not read very much, perhaps just indicating the marginal headings so that you see where we are, but try to present the subject in her and my words combined. I don't know if that solution is a very good one. But I think I can do it here even better, because the text itself seems to be easy. The reasoning of each sentence to sentence, from paragraph to paragraph, in this part of the textbook doesn't seem to give much trouble or much questioning. It seems to be, anyway, to me, easy compared, say, if one reads her chapter on Genesis or Apocalypse or Signs of Being. There, really, each sentence is a proposition by itself and raises questions and so on. Here, it's much more talkative, there are much more illustrations in it, so that the text as such is not difficult, and therefore I think I can do what I propose to do, to go just over the subjects. And perhaps if you always have my epitomes at hand, that if I make comments on that, it should be easy afterwards at home for each one to go through the text and find it rather easy. The first subject here is mind. Truth is mind. And I have summarized it by saying that the divine mind is the remedy of truth. Neither the human mind nor matter is curative. You hear at once her first subject, her first interest she takes in medicine, the first question really she raises is this, is a question which we must raise when we have to do with healing: what is our medicine? Where do I turn to as my remedy? My remedy is truth, and that truth acts through the remedy, through the medicine of mind. That the divine mind is really the only curative agent. So she establishes first in our consciousness the fact that we don't have to turn to anything else but the one divine mind. That's our remedy. That's our medicine. How does she elaborate on this fact? Or how does she clarify this statement? And Here we have the subtones. I put them in numbers, 1, 2, 3. They naturally indicate the synonymous terms, but I put it in numbers so as not to say too much minus mind, minus spirit, minus soul, and so on, but just your reasoning, 1, 2, 3. What is her reasoning? See, she begins in 1 by just making that blunt statement that God made the divine mind the medicine of truth. See, she starts right at the source, at the beginning of the medicine. Says, where does medicine come from? Says, God made mind the medicine. So it's a mind is God's own creation and destined as the medicine of truth. Because mind is first and self-existence, because mind is all in all, therefore mind is must have the same nature as God, and so the nature of medicine must be God's nature. So mind is of the same nature as God, therefore medicine must be of the same nature as God. We can't go to any other nature, to any other agent, healing agent, to any other medicine but God himself, mind. So she establishes just first this point that God made really mind as the medicine. Second, now she clarifies it and says, or in my word, the divine mind never called matter medicine. She has to go further now and say, yes, if I say to somebody, you know, God made all the medicine and that medicine is mind, then the thought could come in and say, yes, but didn't mind create also matter, or called matter as a help for medicine, or anything like that? So she had to purify that concept that mind is spirit, that mind doesn't need the help of anything else, doesn't act through anything else. See, without saying that, you still could say, yes, mind is medicine, but it acts through matter. It is that belief which we have so often, that people say, yes, but the drugs that the chemists and the botanists and the pharmaceutical industry invents are also from God, because God gives them the intelligence to find them out, to discover them. So that would say God is the cause of the medicine, but it needs brain and human intelligence to produce it. You see? That's why she has to bring in a little tone of spirit, see, to show, no, the divine mind never could call matter a medicine. That divine God does not employ drugs, she says, nor hygiene, nor provide them for human use. You hear that, I think, here too. I don't know, sometimes these things are a bit local and or a bit national, but in Switzerland we have lot of nice old doctors from the last centuries that have their basis on healing on plants. Do you have that too? This little plant is very good for this little ill, and this plant is very good if you for that little ill, and so on. And people will say, well, that's divine, because God made the plants and God gave those people the intelligence to find out which plant is now very good for this and this ill. So you can see how easily one drops the tone of the one mind, that God, mind, is the only medicine, by dropping it down, right down to material level or to the level of vegetable means, you see, plant and so on. So here, that's why she has to come in and say, now, mind is mind, and mind is spirit. Mind can never share its might and its honor with anything else, not even with nice little plants. Quite apart then from the intelligence of people working in chemical laboratories finding out new synthetic drugs. So we have to see this point too, you see, as a very natural addition to see that that divine mind never called matter medicine, nor what she says in the text, God never provided them as for human use, that Jesus never employed them, that Jesus never recommended them, so that the purity must be preserved. Then you get the third subtone into it, the three, where I said divine mind is superior to the human mind and to matter. Yes, you see how sometimes one makes a mistake or leaves something out. In the point before, in the two, she ended that thought by saying that matter required a human and material belief before it could be considered medicine. See, sorry that I didn't go along the line clear enough, you see. Once again, she starts a subject, says, in point one, says, God made the divine mind as the medicine of truth. Mind. Because God is all in all, and this all in all is mind, this mind is medicine. Then, in point two, the thought could come in, which said, but cannot this divine mind use matter, or human intelligence, or plants, and so on, as medicine? And so she said, no. The divine mind never made matter as a medicine, nor called it a medicine. And now comes the point which I left out. Then thought naturally says to itself, yes, but why do then some drugs and medicine have power? So she said, well, that's the human mind. That matter required a material belief for it to be considered medicine. So it says, therefore I must bring in a third point. I must bring in that point which says, but even then, if human belief says this and this plant is healthy and this drug can do something, I must show them that the divine mind is still the superior medicine, is superior to the human mind. You get the tone of soul, which is superior. So the third point is that divine mind is superior to the human mind and to matter. You see, you have both, human mind and matter. Can you see, in this third point she could say, well, you don't need to have the intelligence of the human mind to find out a new drug. You don't have to have matter as a chemical, sulfur or salt or whatever, for a drug. Their mind is still superior to both of them, to both the belief and to the material substance. So that in this way she rounds up the concept, what she means by saying that mind alone is the only medicine. And you can see why the first day only needs to have three subtones, doesn't need to go further to principle, because with these three, she completely defined her statement that mind is the only medicine. If she would have gone further to principle, then she would have to have shown that this medicine works, but that's already no more the question. Here, the first big question which we all have to decide on in every case, what is my medicine? My medicine is the only medicine, namely that medicine which I take from the source of all being, from God, and that's divine mind. That divine mind is really the only medicine. As spirit, it shows that it is a medicine which does not need anything else as a help, and that it is superior to every belief in a medicine. And so, in a few paragraphs, she ends defines really the first point of mind, that mind is the remedy of truth.